Welcome to the Texas Values Report. This is Jonathan Sines, and I'm the president of Texas Values, a nonprofit organization here in Texas dedicated to protecting faith, family, and freedom. If you haven't been a part of our show before, we're here on the bridge every Saturday from 12 to 12:30 p.m. We've got some fun stuff to talk about today. A lot of things happening this week. I'm still trying to unpack my trip from last week from D.C., getting to be in the presence of the Pope. I'm getting to be with like-minded folks in Washington, D.C. at Family Research Council's office talking about religious freedom and marriage and being at the Value Voter Summit, not to mention some of the things that are happening in our own state. We've got In God We Trust that has come under fire for being on the back of police cars. We've got a vote coming up in Houston on issues related to religious freedom and safety and sexuality. But today, we've got a very special guest that knows a lot about these issues and has got a lot of experience on it. We have on the line and a guest today, Ryan Anderson. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Happy to be with you. Thanks for having me.
You bet. And many of you are probably familiar with Ryan's work. He works for Heritage Foundation and researches issues of religious liberty, also writes on marriage, has two books that are out. We're going to talk about his book, too. It's called Truth Overruled: The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom. But he's got a significant background being the Senior Research Fellow in American Principles and Public Policy for Heritage Foundation. He's the founder and editor of Public Discourse, which is a fantastic online journal that you should check out that we like to read quite often here in our office. He's been on just about every major news source on cable news, ABC, NBC, Fox, CNN, you name it, probably one of the most visible and widely recognized voices on the media when it comes to the issues of marriage and religious freedom, and has got some great YouTube videos of his debates. He's got a BA from Princeton, where he graduated Phi Beta Kappa, and also has a doctoral degree from University of Notre Dame. He's from Baltimore, Maryland, currently residing in Washington, D.C., and it's on me that I didn't connect with you while we were there, but, you know, last week was a busy week in D.C., a lot happening, and I certainly enjoyed my time. So glad to have you on the show, Ryan. You did an event with us last year in the Dallas area, which I thought was very well received, and about a book that you wrote before, but you got a new book that's out, and I think, I don't remember the actual publishing date, I think right around the end of summer, but after the Supreme Court ruling on the marriage and religious freedom. Tell us a little bit about the book and about the reasons for providing, in essence, an update of these issues.
Sure. I mean, what this book does is it builds on the previous book, being What is Marriage, Man and Woman, a Defense? This new book says, what do we do now? You know, the title of this book is Truth Overruled: The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom. Because what happened earlier this summer was the Supreme Court overruled the truth about marriage, that it's a union of man and woman, husband and wife, mother and father. And now we have to contend in the public square to make a bright future for marriage and religious freedom. I wrote this book really to kind of be the playbook or the user's guide into what do people do now who want to protect marriage, who want to defend marriage, who want to protect religious freedom, who want to promote the common good, even when the truth has been overruled by the government.
Well, and if you look through the table of contents at the different chapter headlines and titles, you'll see you're hitting on all the issues that people are talking about now. Men, women, and children, the consequences of redefining marriage. You've got kind of a tongue-in-cheek, you know, title, Bake Me a Cake, Bigot. We know that issue has been very active. They're already calling the Pope a bigot because of this report about him meeting with Kim Davis, who did not issue marriage licenses because of a religious belief on marriage. But then you get into the sexual orientation issues and building a movement, the long view. And you're no stranger to Supreme Court decisions. As I recall, you wrote an amicus brief with some other fellows, if you will, some other very reputable academics to the U.S. Supreme Court when they were deciding the marriage issue. And as a matter of fact, I believe your brief was cited a few times in one of the dissenting opinions. Is that right?
Yep. So Clarence Thomas, Justice Thomas, cited my amicus brief in this case. And then Justice Samuel Alito cited my previous book in the previous marriage case.
Well, that's fantastic. I mean, that shows that the work you're doing is getting recognized by your Supreme Court. And even sometimes, as we know, if it's in a dissenting opinion, it's not in the prevailing opinion, that can be the catalyst to a decision that comes later, but also gives something for the public to talk about. And those dissenting opinions have been talked about quite a bit. You know, there was I enjoyed your last book. This book has got some fantastic stuff. And one of the things that I noticed and picked up on, speaking of what happens in the future, is page 194. So there's a kind of a subheading, Signs of Hope. So you talk about what's going to, you know, after the Supreme Court ruling, what some other states have done or were doing on the cusp of that. And one of those states that you mentioned that I was excited about is Texas. So, and you go into some detail about Texas, the Pastor Protection Act, the Attorney General opinion that Ken Paxton issued on the issue of clerks, the bill that Greg Abbott signed. So certainly some things to be encouraged by, but obviously there's still some work to do.
Yep, that's exactly right. What I wanted to point out in the book is that there are a variety of states that acted ahead of time to try to protect the rights of conscience and religious liberty should the Supreme Court redefine marriage. And so in Texas, you have the priest and pastor protection. North Carolina passed a bill to protect clerks and magistrates. They saw that if the Supreme Court redefined marriage, they could have a situation like what happened in Kentucky with Kim Davis. They didn't want to have that situation, so they found a way to make a reasonable compromise in which every legally eligible citizen would receive a marriage, but that clerks or magistrates wouldn't be forced by the government to violate their beliefs. My basic message in this book is, how can we find ways to move ahead that seek compromise?
Absolutely. Well, and this is by far one of the hottest issues right now. I mean, it seems to be written about every day, discussed, debated on television. We're talking about, obviously, but on social media, so much discussion. I mean, and a lot of that is because the legal landscape is kind of, you know, was kind of moved under our feet with the Supreme Court being so aggressive on this issue. And we have a website, too, if people want to know more about the law that Texas has, the Pastor Protection Act. It's protectpastors.com, which goes even further. It's about churches and religious organizations and not just pastors. And you can see all that at our website. You wrote a really interesting article at the end of last week on the issues of religious freedom and marriage, and a lot of the discussion about, you know, the Pope's view on this issue and how that ties into some of the dialogue. Tell our listeners a little bit about your article.
So this is on the Kim Davis?
Yeah, it was written towards it was before we knew about Kim Davis having the meeting. I think it was towards the end of last week, just about the fact that the Pope was in D.C. and how that relates to his views on marriage and religious freedom.
Oh, sure. I mean, so in general, what I find about this Pope in general is that a lot of people want to try to spin him one way or the other. The address that he gave at Congress, you know, it hit common themes about the dignity of the vocation of politics. It hit on common themes about we need to seek the common good, and the common good is based upon the truth about what is good for man, what is good for humanity. That also means that we have to be concerned with the natural environment. So he says we need to be concerned about the environment, but he didn't tell us how best to protect the environment. He says we need to be concerned about workers. He didn't tell us how best to do that. We need to be concerned about immigrants. He also said that the golden rule tells us we have to be concerned about human beings at all stages of life, including the unborn. He told us that one of the first freedoms that needs to be protected is religious freedom. And he said that the entire reason he came to the United States was about his concern for marriage and the family, and that marriage and the family are being assaulted like never before, both from inside and from outside. And that was just while he was in D.C. You know, he then met with the Little Sisters of the Poor. He met with Kim Davis while he was in Philadelphia. He spoke at Liberty Hall, Constitution Hall, and he gave a address about religious liberty. He spoke at the close of the World Meeting on Families and just gave an impromptu sermon about the importance of family life, of marriage, of moms and dads, husbands and wives. I mean, I think that it was really remarkable that he doesn't try to score policy points. He said, you know, it's not his role to tell Congress what policy to pass, but he wants to remind them that they need to be seeking the truth. They need to be promoting the common good. They need to be respecting human rights.
No, I think you're right on. You know, I had the pleasure. I was a guest of U.S. Senator Ted Cruz, invited up to be an outside the Capitol when his address was delivered, and then when he came outside to the speaker's podium there, the speaker's balcony, and he addressed the public. Just, I heard a comprehensive message, you know, and it was interesting, or a consistent message, if you will, as well, that there were people all over the crowd that were from different parts of the country, from other parts of the world, many who I believe may, you know, weren't Catholic, of different faiths, and they seemed to be really excited about his presence. But for them to hear this word, this message of his that I felt like was very consistent, you know, he talked a lot about dialogue. And it was going to be interesting to me to hear, you know, how people would try to spin some of this. But I heard some very interesting things. And, you know, one of the loudest responses I felt like I heard from the people that we were around outside, the thousands out there, was when he talked about defending life through every stage of development. And, you know, he was subtle about it. I mean, he didn't use the word abortion. But, I mean, I think that that was a plenty of description for people to know, and maybe an opportunity for people to look at it in different terms and to appreciate we are talking about the issue of life. And so it'd be interesting to see what else happens as we move forward and people, you know, kind of dissect a little bit more of what he said. I want to jump back into your book for just a second. So looking at the praise you got from the beginning, you got Rick Warren, you've got Robert P. George, and Russell Moore. A nice variety there, you know, from not only from different parts of the country, but different denominational backgrounds, but very well known. You're of the younger generation. I'm sure you're younger than me. I'm 42. How is, if you have any sense yet of how the younger generation, because there's a lot of talk about that. You know, the Pope talked about that, about young people. How do you think the young people are receiving your book and this kind of information as we move forward with this issue post-Supreme Court?
You know, it's really been eye-opening to me to see how many young people simply want to hear a message that resonates with them that defends the truth. I've been consistently impressed by the number of young people who I meet when I'm speaking on college campuses and law schools, or people who will send me messages via Facebook or via the Heritage email system to say, you know, I've been looking for a secular argument that defends marriage, that in my gut, I know marriage is the union of a man and a woman. In my religious beliefs, the Bible, the church tells me it's the union of a man and a woman. You've now helped me in my brain and my intellect to connect my faith and my gut with solid philosophy and social science and constitutional law. And I think a lot of people have given up on millennials. They've given up on the younger generation to say, oh, you know, they've already made up their minds. And I think it's the exact opposite. They've been bullied. They've been intimidated. They've been inundated by the media and by activists to be told that there's only one acceptable answer. And yet they don't really believe that in their hearts of hearts. And if they can hear someone actually making a persuasive, reasonable, attractive argument for the truth resonates. And so I think, you know, one of the reasons why I wrote this book was just like the pro-life movement after Roe v. Wade, they didn't give up on life because the Supreme Court issued an activist ruling. We can't give up on marriage after the Supreme Court's marriage ruling simply because the court got it wrong. If anything, we now need to double our effort to reach out to young people and to help them understand what marriage is and why marriage matters and why the Supreme Court shouldn't have redefined marriage.
No, those are great points. And, you know, it takes, courage, if you will, persistence, you know, to interact with young people on college campuses. You know, these days, sometimes it can be really hostile. You know, the students feel very empowered. And I guess that's probably nothing new on college campuses. But it's so important. It's so important to engage with young people at that level, because we know, I mean, they are still forming a lot of their opinions, and not to suggest that as you get older, you don't think more in depth, but you get busy with other things. During that time in college, you know, students have a lot more time to read, to think about these things deeply, to debate them with friends. And so I think you're hitting exactly where this information needs to be put out there. And I've seen some really interesting debates, you know, on YouTube. I encourage our listeners to go check them out. Some really good exchanges that you've had that are very thoughtful, but very important. And, you know, I've had the pleasure of speaking on a number of university campuses, and I watch your videos, by the way, to get an idea of how to better handle some of these things, because you've done it so many times. And so I just want to compliment you about that. If you want to have somebody that's a great speaker and that's thoughtful, that's obviously intellectual on these issues, that goes below the surface. Invite Ryan Anderson to come to your university and talk. I know he's been to Texas several times. He was at the University of Texas last year in the fall. We had him at a private Christian school up in the Dallas area. And so I know he'd be interested in doing that, and we can help if necessary. But I think you're right on that. Millennials, whatever you want to call them, they're really interested in this topic and they're looking for more. And you're certainly providing that. Are you doing any stops as far as your, I mean, is there a book tour or anything of that nature? I know there was an initial announcement, but is there anything going on in that matter that our listeners could know about?
Well, I don't know when I'm next in Texas, but I'm traveling more or less each and every week for the rest of this year. Between now and Thanksgiving, I'm doing at least one or two or three campus lectures every week, but nothing in the Texas area that I can think of right now.
Well, we might have to do something about that. So I know that when you were here, there was a real lively discussion, and this was, I think, on the Hobby Lobby decision at the University of Texas, my alma mater, for undergrad, and how you had the woman that you were debating just kind of in knots, and I thought you, but you were still respectful about it, even though you certainly had the upper hand in the argument. I thought it was done well. You know, your books, at least for me, are quick reads because I read a lot of this information. I just want to encourage people that the book is called Truth Overruled, The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom. We have these books at every event that we're at, and we usually just ask for an offering of $10. That's less than the actual $16.99 price on the book. You might be able to get it at a lower price other places. If people want to come by our office, we're at 900 Congress. I think we ordered 100 or 200 copies of it. We would love to share that with you. We're a big believer and supporter in the work that Ryan's doing. We understand the value of books like these that go below the talking points and the surface, and it really can be used for resources on these issues. And so I'm delighted that you were able to come on for a little bit of time and talk to us about these issues. Do you have any scheduled media appearances that you do, or is it really just by request?
It's really just by request. There's nothing standing. So when, you know, something comes up, that's normally when I'll be booked. So when Kim Davis was in the news a lot at the beginning of September, I'd gone on CNN twice. I wrote an op-ed for the New York Times. None of those things were planned because it's all contingent on what's happening in the news cycle. And so once that happened, you know, we'll pitch out, you know, we'll reach out to the producers and say, hey, we have someone here at the Heritage Foundation who can talk about the Kim Davis situation. If you're looking for comments, sometimes the producers will reach out to us saying, hey, is there someone at Heritage who can talk about these issues? So that's normally how that gets booked. And, you know, each and every time that there was a court case about marriage or Baker or Flores, a photographer, someone who was being penalized by the government, you know, I was writing something for the Daily Signal about it. I was writing something for the Times or the Post or the Wall Street Journal, going on TV. And that's really how we try to do things here at Heritage.
Well, and I noticed that you have a lot of times pieces or folks that work with you on public discourse. That looks like maybe it's a little more regular. And I think, am I right that there's kind of an email that you can subscribe to when articles come out from that publication?
That's correct. So if you go to the public discourse website, simply www.thepublicdiscourse.com. You'll see a place where you can sign up to receive the articles each day by mail. Just scroll to the bottom of the page and it says receive public discourse by email. Just type in your email address there. And each morning around 7 a.m. Eastern time, you'll get the daily article. We publish one article a day, and it's normally written by a professor or by a public intellectual. And it's written for a general audience. So these are scholars who are writing for non-scholarly audiences, trying to explain complicated issues in a way that ordinary people can understand. Today's essay was about how medicine can be corrupted by ideology. Yesterday's essay was about Daniel Patrick Moynihan, the Harvard professor and New York senator who wrote the famous Moynihan Report on the Black family 50 years ago. The day before that was a law professor saying how, you know, the Roman Empire can teach us something about American politics. Last week, it was a philosopher explaining why scientists who claim that science proves that God doesn't exist, they don't actually know what they're talking about. So it's a variety of topics that we try to bring informed commentary to the public square.
No, that's a fantastic description. And I'm noticing in your book, you've got a quote from Marianne Glendon from Harvard University. So, you know, some pretty high level academic people here that are supporting or endorsing your book, which is always encouraging. You know, I studied family policy issues at the University of Texas under Norville Glenn, and I can almost imagine that if he was still teaching this course, he's no longer with us, but that your book would probably be part of his course, and I would certainly recommend it. The new book is called Truth Overruled, The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom. Ryan T. Anderson is the author. He has been our guest today, and we were delighted to have you and love to have you back again. And welcome people to go to publicdiscourse.com and see the articles. And this is the kind of information people need right now to continue to get informed, to get educated, and to be thinking more thoughtfully about these issues. Thanks, Ryan, for being with us.
Thank you.
All right. Well, fantastic. You know, it's always good to have people like Ryan on. You know, we've got a variety of different guests that we've had, from elected officials, from activists that are on the ground, from pastors that are actively engaged in their church community, all the way to having somebody today like Ryan from D.C. that is seeing things from a national perspective, but certainly appreciates the impact that it has on different states and on the state of Texas and the type of platform that we have. You know, we spent some time together and we did an event for him, in the Dallas area. And so I'm certain that we'll be looking for an opportunity to have him again. But come by our office if you want to get a copy of the book, Truth Overruled. We have it for an offering of $10, which basically that was our cost. That's how much we paid for it. And so it's a good read, you know, and it won't take you long, but it's also a resource. It's not something to just a novel that you run through. It's something to go back to, like I was suggesting. It's something that could be used in a college-level course. And it just makes me think about when I was a student studying these issues at the University of Texas, this would have been something like what we would have read that would have fit right in. And it's so fresh. I mean, look, the Supreme Court ruled at the end of June, and this book came out with a month or so. I mean, it's right on top and in the middle of what's happening and being discussed. And so, you know, I touched on with Ryan that, you know, there's this issue in Houston kind of moving forward, and he touches on issues of sexuality, how there's a difference. One of the titles of one of the chapters is Why Sexual Orientation is Not Like Race. And that's being discussed in Houston on this ordinance, this bathroom ordinance. They're trying to create new classes of discrimination for people based on sexuality, based on gender identity, and things of that nature. And that's the argument they're trying to use, that race and sexual orientation are the same. And he's makes some good arguments in here about why they're not. You could appreciate, as someone with my ethnic background, being Mexican-American, being Hispanic, people will throw that at me sometimes, and they'll ask me that question. Or they'll try to make that claim or that myth that they're the same, and they're just not, you know. And I'll have a good opportunity to do that when people try to suggest that some reason I would be against interracial marriage. And I have to remind them that I'm a product of that, if you will. You know, my parents have different ethnic background. People would consider them different racial backgrounds. And you know, look, they got a couple of looks from time to time when they were younger. And, you know, I had some experiences growing up where people said some things to my father that weren't right based on his heritage and ethnicity. I've seen those things happen. This issue is not the same. And, you know, and you have leaders in the Hispanic and African-American community that have been very vocal about that. So that's what he talks about. And one of the titles is Religious Freedom, a Basic Human Right. Well, those were the words that the Pope used last week, when he was in D.C. And I talked about that a little bit last week, you know, and so kind of the update to that, which we didn't know last week, was that the county clerk from Kentucky that was put in jail for her religious beliefs on marriage and not issuing same-sex marriage licenses, she met with the Pope. Who knew? And apparently they did some things to keep it undercover. And the Pope, to his credit, according to her, you know, was encouraging to her, told her to stay strong and stay with a consistent message and ethic about conscientious objection being a basic human right, religious freedoms. And, you know, and look, I can understand why they didn't make it public. I mean, the Pope had a number of different things to do, praying at Ground Zero, meeting with people in Philadelphia, meeting with the Little Sisters of the Poor, which was an unannounced visit as well. And so I think that was probably a considerate on their part to not make it a public spectacle then, to let his trip continue, to let him go back to his home, and then to have a discussion about it. But he was asked about it on the plane. And we've got a graphic up about this at our Facebook page where he talks about where we talk about the Pope's comments on this issue. And you know, look, I mean, the Pope is a religious figure, but obviously, you know, when it comes to these kind of geopolitical issues and issues that are fundamental principles, people are very interested in what he thinks. And so I think it was very relevant to hear the message of religious freedom, respect for the family, respect for life, and respect for foreigners, respect for people that, you know, come to our country, or people, you know, someone that's a stranger to you. All those are central themes that are in the Bible. That's where this comes from. And so for to see all these people out there interested in him receiving that message, receiving biblical words and encouragement from whatever they might have thought about the Pope, I was very encouraged about that. Go to our website, txvalues.org, to see the latest of the work that we're doing. We certainly continue to count on your donations. We're a 501c nonprofit organization. To be able to do this work, to do this radio show, and the great things that we do, in my opinion, we need your support like never before. So, but check us out every Saturday here on the Bridge from 12 to 12:30 to hear about issues of faith, family, and freedom in Texas.